Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 3, Karma Yoga, text number 17. Yastvatma ritya eva syad. Atma tritascha manava. Atmanyeva cha santushtas. Tasya karyam na vidyate. Ya, one who, two, but, atmarati, taking pleasure in the self, eva, certainly, syat, remains, atmatriptaha, self-illuminated, cha, and, manava, a man, Atmani, in himself, eva, only, cha, and, santushtaha, perfectly satiated, tasya, his, karyam, duty, na, does not, vidyate, exist. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. For one who takes pleasure in the self, whose human life is one of self-realization, and who is satisfied in the self only, fully satiated, for him there is no duty. Purport. Person who is fully Krishna conscious, and is fully satisfied by his acts in Krishna consciousness, no longer has any duty to perform. Due to his being Krishna conscious, all impiety within is instantly cleansed, an effect of many, many thousands of yajna performances. By such clearing of consciousness, one becomes fully confident of his eternal position and relationship with the Supreme. His duty thus becomes self-illuminated by the grace of the Lord, and therefore he has no longer any obligations to the Vedic injunctions. Such a Krishna-conscious person is no longer interested in material activities, and no longer takes pleasure in material arrangements like wine, women, and similar infatuations. So the text again, yas tvatmatir eva syat atmatriptas tramanava Atmanyeva chasantushtas tasya karyam na vidyate. One who takes pleasure in the self with human life is one of self-realization, and who is satisfied in the self only, fully satiated, for him there is no duty. Here Prabhupada uses the word fully. Sometimes we don't like these words like fully, because we're here in the material world, and we're imagining ourselves to be something we're not. So since we're imagining ourselves to be something what we're not, therefore it's very inconvenient to find out who we actually are sometimes. It interferes with our imagination. Like, for instance, there are two verses in Bhagavad Gita that are repeated twice. So they must have some importance, and indeed they cover two aspects of Krishna consciousness. One is what we're supposed to do now that we're conditioned souls in the material world. And the second thing is what we're supposed to do to come to the spiritual platform of consciousness. So the first one is Shreyan Swadamo Viguna, which is repeated in this chapter. I believe it's like the 30-something verse. 35th verse, I believe. Yes. Shreyan Swadamo Viguna Paradharma Sunistita Shredharme Nididam Shreyak Paradharmo Bhayavaha. That it is better to perform one's own prescribed duty than to perform someone else's duty. Destruction in the cause of one's own duty is better, because to follow someone else's path is dangerous. In other words, especially in Kali Yuga, everyone wants to be something different. Everyone wants to be the king or queen. man wants to become a woman wants to become a man. After becoming a woman and a man, they don't like, they want to become something in between a woman and a man. No one likes what they are. They want to become something else. So because of that, people don't feel like they have their duty is whatever whimsically comes to their mind. That's what they think their duty is. That's what they're supposed to do. And there's material nature will justify anything we're doing, that actually we're a good person, and because we're a good person, we can do anything we want, and it's still good because we're doing it. But the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna doesn't agree with that. He says, Yak Shastra Vidim Utsrija Vartate Kamakarata Nasasidim Avatnoti Nasukam Naparam Gatim. That one who gives up Shastra and acts whimsically attains neither peace nor happiness nor the supreme destination. Now everyone is actually working for peace and happiness. And of course, whether people know what the supreme destination is, that's another thing. But at least people want peace and happiness. No one's working to make themselves miserable. That's easy. You don't have to work for that. Someone will come along and help you become miserable. But to actually work to become happy, now the word is used, kamakarata, whimsical. Now people don't think they're acting whimsically. Matter of fact, they think they're acting very intelligently. But the question is, what does Krishna mean by whimsical? Krishna says in the previous verse, Trivida narakasyedam dvara nashitam atmanaha kama krodha tata lobas tasmat etam trayam chajet. There are three gates leading to hell, lust, anger, and greed. Every sane person should give them up because they lead to degradation of the self. Now this is a big issue in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaking. I remember when I first joined the movement, and I loved to give Bhagavad Gita classes because I first practiced the first couple of days I joined, I memorized the little blue Bhagavad Gita. So I was just quoting verses all the time. And my temple president, we become very disturbed because he said, why are you always talking about lust? People don't like to hear about lust. They like to hear about love. But in the material world, love and lust are more or less synonymous. People think love is lust, and lust is love. Therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, at least, Krishna will tell us in this third chapter that this enemy called lust is our enemy, and we have to find out where it's situated. And it's situated in every part of our body, and especially in our contaminated intelligence, where we can't really discriminate between what we're supposed to do and what we're not supposed to do. So sometimes, when we want to do something, we just ignore Shastra, because it's very inconvenient. It's telling us we can't do that. Prabhupada says in so many different lectures and instructions that women should act like this, men should act like that. According to your duty, you should act like this. We say, well, I don't like that. It doesn't sound very romantic. It's so strict, and you know, we're not living in such an age. You know, this is for. Maybe Prabhupada was living in some kind of rigid culture where people had to act like that, but we're free. We're living in modern society. People will think we're weird. We actually try to act like men or women. That would be very restricting. As if we're not restricted anyhow. No, I just do whatever I want. I'm not restricted. I do whatever lust, anger, and greed tell me to do. And the more I act like that, the more I become under their influence. And my freedom diminishes, doesn't increase by just doing things, whatever my senses and mind dictate to me. So, one has to find out what one's duty is. Now, our real duty is to be Krishna conscious, to become to the platform, as it says here, atmarita, self-satisfied in Krishna consciousness. Now, at the end of life, whatever we might be, whatever our position is, we get zero credit for it. It's not that at the end of life, if you become a temple president, then when the Yamadutas are discussing with the Vishnu Dutas whether they take you away, and one of the arguments the Vishnu Dutas use is that you were a temple president. It's not a strong argument. Or a sannyasi, or with GVC, or initiating guru, my dear Yamadutas, but he did this service. Really? Well, too bad. No, what's going to matter is our consciousness at the time of death, at the time of leaving this body. If we're actually thinking about Krishna, then we become eligible to at least come back in a Krishna conscious situation. And if we're lamenting over the fact that we couldn't enjoy our senses, then we'll come back and get the opportunity to enjoy them again. So, that depends upon how much we're hearing about Krishna. Of course, hearing about Krishna is only the first step, but without that step, there's no other steps. It's not the end. You know, I sat in class, and therefore, I can put in my diary that this is my 500th class I attended sequentially, and therefore I'm sure to go back to Godhead, because 500 is, you know, it's a big number. And I'm sure the Vishnu Dutas are calculating, and 501 is, I'm sure I'm going back to Godhead. No, we have to hear, but we have to hear in such a way as to try and understand what we're hearing. But understanding what we're hearing is only possible when we're actually interested in applying it. Because if we're not interested in applying what we heard, then Krishna will never give us the understanding intelligence to understand it. We'd be very disappointed. Oh, this is what I'm supposed to do, but I'm never going to do that. That's not what I want to do. That's only what Krishna wants me to do. So Krishna will keep us bewildered. We can sit in class, we can read the books, turn them upside down, right side, inside out. We'll never understand it unless we're actually interested in following it. And even if we follow it, we have to learn how to follow it. It's not that now I've understood everything. Commonly, after getting a little illumination, we think, now I've understood everything. For those who go on book distribution, sometimes one gets very inspired, and suddenly the books go out. When one first starts out on the street, and everyone is telling us to get a job, get lost, join a better cult, join a good cult. And then after some time, after being beaten down, the false ego is beaten down, and we're crying out for Krishna, please save my reputation, let me distribute some books out here. Collect some Lakshmi. Otherwise, they'll think, what happened to the Maharati? He must have been hit by a Brahmastra or something. So then Krishna starts reciprocating our desire, sends people, takes the book, and we start getting puffed up. Then, yes, I am great. I knew it. Surrender. Stop immediately. Stop. Open your wallet. Let me see what's in there. Yeah, that's what I want. Right there. Hand it over. And then suddenly the whole world collapses again. You know, everyone's telling us to get a job. Go back to school. Do something intelligent. So we may become bewildered by, we may get some empowerment, become an instrument, and then if we get puffed up and bewildered, then we're back where we started from. So we may believe we've actually, at one point, when we're floating in transcendental happiness, then we think, I know everything. No one can tell me anything. And the next moment we're down and, you know, thinking, help Krishna, I don't know anything. All the techniques, you know, we thought we learned, you know, you stop them like this, you say this, and they do that, and then you say this, and they're supposed to do that. It doesn't work sometimes. So, in the same way, one has to understand that without surrendering to Krishna, without developing the mentality of a devotee, without trying to hear and understand that we're simply dependent upon Krishna and try to act as the dependent servant of Krishna, then we may think we've heard and understood everything, and we may think now I can go out and apply it, it's going to work, but it's not so mechanical. It's a question of feeling and surrender to Krishna. And that means that in our relationships with others, not only in book distribution or in any other time, but we have to develop actual feelings of loving relationships with the devotees. We have to feel that I'm actually belonging as a devotee. I'm not just here temporarily until suddenly I meet the goddess of fortune or the two-handed Narayan, and then we set up our own little kingdom somewhere else. No, we're actually here to try to belong to Krishna's family. And then if we do that, then we'll become inspired to actually go out and work for Krishna's family. Unless we feel we belong to a family, we're not going to work for the family. If you were dropped into someone's house, then you know, you're not going to stay over someone's house, you're not going to get a job to support the family just because you're visiting someone. You have to actually feel you belong to a family, then you'll work for the family. And unless we know what our activities are, what we're trying to achieve, namely to become a pure devotee of Krishna, to develop the qualities and characteristics of a pure devotee, and work simply to please him, then even if we're part of a family, but if we don't know what the family is supposed to accomplish, then we'll wind up eventually fighting in the family also. If we're not getting happiness from the family, and we don't know what the purpose of the family is, what the family is trying to achieve, then after a while we'll get frustrated with the family too. So unless we know we're trying to achieve Atmariti, happiness in just becoming, being Krishna conscious and serving Krishna in this world, then we can gradually become fully conscious of Krishna. But in the meantime, we have, although we're engaged in pure devotional service, there is varna and ashram. It's not just an imagination. Although we're obviously not acting fully in varna and ashram, we don't even know what practically it means. First of all, if we ask what a Brahmin is, how many have second initiation here? Don't be shy. Okay, so we ask someone, what are the qualities of the Brahmin according to the 18th chapter? I believe it's verse, it's after 50. What verse number is? What time? 42? So what is the qualities of a Brahmin? Who knows? What's that? No, all the qualities. I know you know. We won't embarrass. Anyhow, we won't embarrass anyone. Although we should. Okay, what are the qualities of Brahmin according to the... Yes, someone. What's that? Oh, English is all right. Or even Slovenian, it would be all right. We're really struggling here. We don't even know what the qualities are, what to speak of having them. Sama dhamma tapaso cham shantir arjavam evacha gyanam igyanam asti gyam brahma karma sabhavajam. So what is that? Translation?
Mind control, sense control, austerity, cleanliness, simplicity, knowledge, realized knowledge, religiosity, forgiveness, are the qualities which are in the works.
Yes. So, what to speak of Kshatriya? Surya Tejas Triti Daksha Yude Chapi Palayanam Danam was Ifra, Soya Tejas Triti Daksha, Yude Chapi Palayanam, Dhanam Ishvara Bhavascha, Shatra Karma Sabhavajam, Krishi Goraksha Vanijam, Vaisha Karma Sabhavajam, Krishi. Something about pulling. Sve Sve Karma Vidyat. Parichayatmaka Karma, Shudra Karma Sabhavajam. Parichayatmaka, service to others. So there are qualities, and at least we're trying to manifest some of them. So we do have, in our society, people become Brahmins, there are Brahmacharis, there are some devotees who are sannyasis, grihasthas. So it's not like we've thrown out Vanashram. But obviously, we're not centering on Vanashram, because it won't, in itself, will only help us regulate our senses so that we refrain, especially from the four activities, namely illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and meat eating. So especially varna and ashram is meant for, and at least how we're applying it, avoiding illicit sex. And we're not so much engaged in the varnas, but at least the ashram, so our minds can be peaceful, so that if we're brahmacharis, we don't look at every brahmacharini and think, you know, maybe she's the one, and vice versa. And householders, they think, well, this is my wife, this is my husband. It was a bad deal, but you get what you pay for. So he's supposed to stick together. That was Prabhupada's. He didn't say, oh, be happy together, live happily ever after. That when he married couples, he said you should stay together. That's a big accomplishment in Kali Yuga. If someone says, I've been married for 50 years, people, wow, that's amazing. But for three different people. Or as I said, one devotee lady, she was living with one devotee man for like 20 years, and they had three children. And one day she went to her mother and said, Mother, I think we're going to get married. And the mother grabbed her hand and said, Daughter, are you sure he's the right man? So, especially in Kali Yuga, where people are very whimsical, therefore these ashrams are there so our minds can be peaceful. So when the ideas come to our mind, you know, because the whole world is full of imagination of how we're going to enjoy by breaking these principles. So if we become determined to follow them, then our mind becomes peaceful. We don't get entangled. But that, we're not following it to such a great extent that we're doing all the rituals and, you know, the different samskaras, we have to do all of them. Although sometimes the devotees are getting involved in those things. They have no time for chanting Hare Krishna. They're just doing one ritual after another. For prosperity, of course. But we're trying to follow vana and ashram, especially ashram, such an extent our minds are peaceful enough we can peacefully chant Hare Krishna. And that's our end. Engage in the loving reciprocations with the devotees and preaching the Hare Krishna movement, engaging in missionary work, in mission work, and missionary work. That will actually bring us to the highest platform of Krishna consciousness. But before we become fully Krishna conscious, we have to follow the rules and regulations. Otherwise, we're living in our imaginations. That I'm a pure devotee. Prabhupada said we're all pure devotees. And whenever we see the word devotee, we think that's me. Although, how many of us, when we see the deities, are, oh, Krishna, we immediately faint in ecstasy. Someone comes with a feather to see if we're still breathing. We're so deeply absorbed in love of God. No, whether we're here or we see the deities or not, we think, what's the big deal? They'll be there tomorrow. They'll still give me prasadam if I don't see him today, so it's all cool. It's okay. No, we're trying to become devotees of Krishna. We're trying to become devotees of the holy name, which is non-different from Krishna. So that when we chant Hare Krishna, we're actually absorbed in actually remembering Krishna, what to speak of being in total ecstasy, which just means fully Krishna conscious. Because when it says fully Krishna conscious here, it's actually referring to the stage of bhava. At least bhava is a preliminary stage. Because it says that everything becomes clear at the stage of bhava. One knows, he becomes fully confident of his eternal position in relationship with the Supreme. So that's bhava. One actually enters into one's spiritual body at the stage of bhava. Enters means that we become aware of who we actually are. And that's just the beginning, because that's just a glimpse. Just like you may wake up in the morning and you start remembering who you are, but you're not doing anything. You just remember who you are. Next is you have to start getting involved in activities. So at the preliminary stage of bhava, then not only a sakti, you're always remembering Krishna and his pastimes, and you're always in bliss, feeling Krishna's presence. But bhava, you start remembering who you actually are. And then when it intensifies, because bhava is one ray in the sunlight of prema, then you actually get the spiritual energy to actually enter into Krishna's pastimes. But at least here it says, atmaritas, at the stage of bhava, when you're actually feeling one's own identity, one's own love for Krishna, the beginning of that. Srimati Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes to experience three things. Does anyone know why he came here? You can ask him. Anyone ever think about why did they come here? You know, Slovenia, Ljubljana. Why did they come here? Well, because I heard there was some nice prasadam here. Now, why did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu come? What did he want to experience? Yes.
He wanted to experience this loving relationship, how to be his devotee.
Well, that's that.
And
what is that experience? There are three parts of that experience. Yes.
The sweetness of Lord Rani experiences.
The sweetness of what? That sweetness of Srimati Radharani's love.
And then the beauty of Radharani experiences in him, I mean the beauty of that Radharani enjoys in Krishna.
How she experiences Krishna's wonderful qualities.
And the depths of her love.
Not quite. Anyhow, close. First thing is that Srimati Radharani, if you love someone, you experience great happiness. So the love of Srimati Radharani. And then the wonderful qualities she experiences that Krishna has. Because when you love someone, then you bring out the good qualities of someone else. Matter of fact, I was reading a book, even the materialists say no. If you serve someone, then you start seeing all the good qualities that they have. Because unless you see all the good qualities, why will you serve them unless you're being forced to do it? So if you voluntarily do service to someone, then you realize all the good qualities they have. That's just the nature. So by serving Krishna, Srimati Radharani experiences all the more wonderful qualities than Krishna has. Actually brings it out. As well as the love that she has for Krishna. If you love someone, there's a lot of pleasure in loving someone. If you have a child, the mother takes great happiness in loving the child. When you feel your own love, then you actually feel like you have some, purpose of life, some value. And the love that Krishna has for Srimati Radharani, she experiences that to an unlimited degree. In other words, feeling Krishna's love is unlimited pleasure because Krishna has so much love. Feeling his good qualities, experiencing his good qualities, is also unlimitedly pleasurable. And feeling your own love for Krishna. So that's what everyone wants to do. Everyone wants to feel love. No one's happy by hating people. Ever hate anyone? Feel how happy you are? I hate you. I feel great. I just want to increase my hate so I can feel better. No, people feel good when they, so-called, are in the material world. Lust is taken as love, but it makes people feel good. At least they become intoxicated by that. Of course, it usually turns into hatred after some time or frustration. But in any case, people want to love and they want to be loved. And they want to love someone and realize how wonderful they are. People want to find out, experience good qualities in others and appreciate them. So at Rati, Atmariti, then you actually start feeling your own love for Krishna. It's not just we're coming here and worshiping the deities and we're hoping to get something back from it, something auspicious, or maybe even a little ecstasy or some reciprocation from Krishna. But when it's at the stage of Atmariti, then one actually feels love for Krishna, and that makes one quite happy, that one is actually doing something valuable for Krishna, loving him, which is what Krishna wants. And then one can actually feel Krishna's love for not only oneself, but for all living entities. And then one realizes how wonderful Krishna's qualities are. So this is at the stage of Atmariti. But before we come to that stage, there's going to be some hesitation to serve Krishna at times because we may not be so clear. Of course, at the stage of Nishta, then these things are not so much impediments, in spite of the fact that we don't feel our love for Krishna so intensely all the time. Still, we're not so much attracted by the insignificance of material sense gratification, so it doesn't bother us very much. And at the stage of Ruchi, we become intoxicated. We may not love Krishna so deeply, but we're intoxicated by the happiness of doing devotional service. So devotional service is the emphasis at Ruchi, because it gives one pleasure. And at Sakti also, the emphasis starts to change because one starts realizing how nice Krishna is in his pastimes, how wonderful it is. And so there's like an in-between between just trying to be happy by devotional service and realizing that maybe I should try and make Krishna happy. And then it transforms into bhava, where one actually feels that one's goal in life is to make Krishna happy. One actually feels love for Krishna. And that is even greater pleasure than just feeling the happiness from devotional service. So in any case, before that, when we're not at Nishta, or we're not on the stage of liberation, then we have to find out what our duty is and perform it. Otherwise, we'll get entangled. We've already seen that. People have, just like to give a vivid example, when Prabhupada left, then those who took up the role of initiating guru within ISKCON, they thought that they had become Mahabhagavats just by becoming a guru. Seems a little strange now, I hope. They thought that just by getting one of my friends was one of the initiating gurus, so I was like, we were quite close. And he told me, isn't it wonderful? Now I've become an initiating guru. Now I have all the eight mystic powers. What's that? One of my friends who had become, this is 1978 or something, after he, yeah, a little before, 78. He told me he was one of the original initiating gurus after Prabhupada left. So he told me, he said, isn't it great I become an initiating guru? Now I have all the eight mystic powers. Because he thought by becoming an initiating guru, he'd become a pure devotee. And that was actually an official philosophy that was being distributed to us. But obviously it's not exactly reality. But they followed it, and they got into a lot of trouble, some of them, or all of them. We all got into a lot of trouble following it, because Prabhupada said big fires and little fires. If you have a big fire, then anything you throw into the fire, then it'll actually burn. But if you have a smaller fire, you throw too much into it, the fire is going to get into difficulty. So when you're, some of us at that time, I was 78, so I was, oh, I guess I was quite old at that time. That I was I 29? Let's see, 40, yeah, I was 29 years old. So, most of the initiating, the oldest ones were 29. Maybe, I don't know, older than that. Kirtananda was 39. He was the oldest. And suddenly, you know, you were just a ordinary person, maybe a sannyasi, and now suddenly you had, you know, 300 women who were completely dedicated to you. You went from a brahmachari to having 300 women falling at your feet, and you were the whole existence. In other words, you had practically you had 300 women looking at you as the husband or potential boyfriend or whatever else that they were looking at. And then you were given unlimited wealth and prestige. And you were a manager. That's how you got, you know, the position. He hadn't read the books for the last 10 years. You knew there was a book called the Bhagavad Gita, and you had opened it once by mistake. And now you're suddenly confronted with, you know, unlimited prestige and opulence and everything you were dreaming about when you weren't supposed to be dreaming. So, and then no wonder they got into difficulty. And you went, how is it possible that, you know, Prabhupada was a pure devotee? Why do you? No, actually it was because there was a misunderstanding of what the position was. And anyone who misunderstood the position, then they got into difficulty. They took on more than they could actually handle. So it's not like, oh, these poor, that was our mistake we made, what was that, 30 years ago or something? And now we've learned so much, we don't make any mistakes anymore. Good luck. No, actually, unless we actually clearly understand what our duties are and follow it, then we can't make any progress. Then we have to act according to it. Because, you know, when you think you're a Mahabhagavat, then you can do things that an ordinary devotee wouldn't do. And if you're not a Mahabhagavat, if you don't think you're a Mahabhagavat, then you'll be much more careful. Because you know you'll get into trouble, because you don't have the spiritual potency to just imitate someone like Srila Prabhupada. So that we have to find out for ourselves, because that's our responsibility, to find out what our duties are, and then to execute them, so we become Krishna conscious. Otherwise, we start imagining that we can just violate the rules for a conditioned soul because we're devotees. Then we're imagining, if we're not actually on the highest platform of devotion, then we'll get burnt by the material nature. Material nature is not so forgiving. It's not that I act as if I imitate a pure devotee, therefore the material nature will say, oh, you're doing such a good job of imitation, I won't bother you at all. You're a wonderful actor. We'll give you the Maya prize. Yeah, she'll give you, we'll get a prize, we'll get a big slap in the face. That will be our reward. Anyhow, I'll stop there. Any question? That's what Prabhupada once said. Prabhupada said one of the problems in ISKCON is that the devotees aren't afraid of Maya. We actually believe because I've changed my dress or my address, therefore Maya can't touch me. When the Yamadus come and, you know, take me away, I show them, look. Go away. Yes.
So I have noticed there were some devotees, they were having difficulties. They were something like in between one ashrams. They were like, actually, they were brahmacharis, but they were clearly wanted to be in a grihastha ashram.
It's called brahmastra. Between brahmacharya and grihastha, they're about to explode.
But actually, they didn't want to take responsibility that comes with
bachelor daddies, probably is called bachelor daddies.
Yes, yes. They were like they wanted the pleasure of this one ashram, but they didn't want to take responsibility of. So I think it's very important to know how to act and what's our duty, but also that with this position and our situation to know what is our responsibility as a brahmachari or as a grihastha or as a brahmana or whatever position we are inclined to be.
Yeah, because the material nature is an equal opportunity employer. It's not that we can do anything we want. Material nature will say, well, anyhow, they're a devotee. They can do whatever they want. No, material nature, it doesn't matter where we live or what our clothing is. Material nature acts equally to everyone. So Prabhupada writes that everything in this chapter at the end, practically one of the last verses. Oh, actually, it's in the fifth chapter. Karma Yoga, Action in Krishna Consciousness. The Lord is not partial to anyone. Krishna Consciousness, however, brings one into spiritual life, even while one is within the jurisdiction of matter, for it is an arousing of spiritual existence by practice in the material world. The more one is advanced, the more he is freed from the clutches of matter. The Lord is not partial toward anyone. Everything depends on one's practical performance of duties in Krishna consciousness, which helps one control the senses in every respect and conquer the influence of desire and anger. I'm going too fast, I guess. Did you get that? And one who stands fast in Krishna consciousness, controlling the above-mentioned passions, remains factually in the transcendental stage, or Brahma Nirvana. So Krishna is not partial. It depends upon getting free from lust, anger, and greed, controlling the senses, and engaging them in Krishna's service. And then Krishna will reciprocate accordingly. But if we imagine that we're pure devotees and we can get away with it, whatever we want to do or think or whatever, then that's the seventh offense against chanting the holy name, committing sin on the strength of chanting. And we won't get love of God. It won't. But anyhow, we have to try the best we can and try to be, as Prabhupada writes in the Nectar of Devotion, the only real qualification of Krishna consciousness is sincerity. So we have to be honest. Yes.
Hare Krishna, thank you. For a temple president, is it important to cultivate the qualities of a brahmana, the qualities of a kshatriya, or both?
Qualities of a devotee. But generally temple presidents have to have some quality of leadership, some vision. I mean, the temple president should, in my opinion, should actually have some vision with where the temple's going to go. It shouldn't just be, you know, like a person who just makes sure that the flowers are watered or something. Should have a vision what the whole purpose of the temple is. If the temple president doesn't understand what the purpose of the temple is and what everyone's supposed to do in the temple to fulfill that purpose, then the temple doesn't go anywhere. It's like a boat. You have a captain. The captain should know where the boat's supposed to go. If the captain doesn't know, then the boat will just go in a circle. So at least they have some vision where to take the boat. Now, someone at least, they should be able to inspire to do everything else. But Kshatriya, none of us, who's a Kshatriya? We're not, ultimately our movement is not going on by Kshatriya qualities. It's going on by loving exchanges with the devotees. That will advance our movement better than, you know, if you don't wash the dishes, I got my sword. It probably won't inspire too many people to wash dishes, you know. Wash the dishes, Prabhu. See all those dead bodies there. They hesitated. Anything else? Thank you very much. Grantaraj Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.